From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Today, we are starting in a very understandable space. Many of our fellow listeners have had terrible experiences in high school, and many of our listeners may be in high school as they hear the story today. Imagine you're back in high school. You're a student. You're kind of bored. You're dozing in class. You're massively stressed out. It's your last year before you graduate because you have to tackle all these tremendously important exams. Like most kids, you are exhausted by hours and hours of endless studying, and you're kind of just excited to get the year over with when you feel a hard, sharp tap on your shoulder and it jolts you awake. You turn around and all of a sudden the world falls dark. Your head explodes in pain. You're bombarded by these scenes of violent, otherworldly lands, nightmare. It's like that montage in Event Horizon. You try to scream, but you cannot make a sound. And then later, when you regain your faculties, you learn that this happened to people throughout your entire school on the same day, around the same time. This is what happened to a 17-year-old named Siti Nurhaniza. This is the case of the Screaming Girls of Malaysia. Here are the facts.
Yeah, today's story takes us to a place in Malaysia called Kelantan, which is pretty isolated, very rural place on the border of Thailand. It's known as Peninsular Malaysia on the west side, of the country, the western edge of the country. And in many ways, Kelantan is culturally, to an off-mic discussion we had, none of us are Malaysian, nor do we have familiarity even listening much to this particular dialect of Malaysian. So we're going to do our level best as always. But, you know, try and give us the benefit of the doubt if you can. So in many ways, Kelantan is culturally distinct from other parts of the country. For example, it has this local language that I'm talking about called Kelantan Patani Malay. And to many outsiders, this wouldn't be something they could even parse at all. Even those fluent in standard Malay, which is the common tongue of the language. This area is also overwhelmingly religious.
Yeah, about 95% of the population there is Muslim. And unlike the rest of the country, Kelantan's week follows the Islamic calendar, as opposed to the Gregorian or any other calendar that is accepted by large groups of people. The work actually begins on Sunday, the actual start of the week, at least according to the Gregorian calendar and many others. And it ends on Thursday, which is just a little bit different. So you have Friday and Saturday are essentially what would be considered the weekends. And if you're thinking about just Malaysia as a whole, this place really does almost function as a separate country, although it is not.
Yeah, that's right. It is culturally distinct in a number of ways. But, of course, it is still part of the country of Malaysia, and it still has everything that a modern country has, school systems, infrastructure, and so on. So kids can't play hooky, really. And that's why in July of 2018, this 17-year-old, Sita, was just like any other student at her school, the Kedera National Secondary School. It's called SMK Kedera there in Kelantan. She can now recall that sensation, that tap that eventually led to her falling to the floor. She remembers the visions she saw, especially a face of pure evil is how she described it before she passed out due to this blinding pain in her head. It's no secret that high school is an immensely stressful time for students, both on a social level, but also on a physiological level. Your body is changing. And it's also, As everyone can recall, it's not uncommon for students to have bouts of nervousness, panic attacks, depression, and so on. That's just part of growing up. And also, it's such a, again, such a emotionally trying and exhausting time.
I would just say it's a part of growing up. It's also just a part of reality now for everybody.
Totally.
It's almost like we all got transferred back into that feeling. I don't know.
I think a lot of us still have, you know, dreams of high school years afterwards, right? Or decades later. There might be somebody in our audience today who is in, for instance, their 60s, and tonight when they sleep, they will be a junior in high school again. You don't ever really graduate in the mind, you know? However, what Sita felt happening to her and what observers saw were two very different things. They saw Sita collapse, and her best friend, Ruzdia Roslin, remembers she was watching Sita, and Sita felt like she couldn't scream. Like in a nightmare, she was trying to make a noise, and all that came out was like, but her best friend, the other classmates, and the teacher watched her screaming uncontrollably at the top of her lungs, and they were too frightened to touch her. It looked like, was she seizing? What was going on? They definitely weren't restraining her. And then somehow this appeared to become contagious. Within minutes, children throughout the entire school and other classrooms started screaming, having these fits, uncontrollably falling to the floor. One child fainted, and she claimed that she saw the same figure, that face of pure evil, that Sita saw right before she passed out.
Yeah, it makes me think of, like, you know, something from The Crucible or something, you know, this whole idea of contagious insanity or contagious hysteria, I guess, which was something that we saw during the Salem witch trials, which that play is based around. Those that were unaffected by this, I guess, contagious screaming and some teachers began to panic. I mean, this is... We'll get to it a little later, but this was just in terms of like some audio, but this was an absolutely unsettling, to say the least, if not terrifying, panic-inducing situation. They actually ran away and locked themselves into classrooms, barricading the doors. They felt as though they were in danger. The visceralness of these screams and of this violence and trauma unseen being done upon these young people. Can't even imagine. I mean, they absolutely just bolted. Self-preservation became top of mind, which is saying a lot when you're someone who's there to like help and nurture and, you know, be a guardian to these students. You immediately are so freaked out that you're like, peace, I gotta go. Like, this is too much. People outside the school heard the screams. This is absolute cacophony, you know, of this noise, shrill, horrid noise. One food stall owner, like a food truck across the street, recalls seeing at least 9 different girls being carried, kicking and screaming out of different parts of the school, different classrooms. Authorities called in Islamic spiritual leaders and healers to perform the equivalent of something along the lines of an exorcism, but we'll call it a mass prayer session. And you could probably imagine the scene. Ben, you want to paint it for us?
Yeah. Well, here's the issue. So the food stall owner reports seeing these religious authorities, these spiritual healers, arrive at the scene with their helpers, and then they also disappear inside for hours. These healers do consider this a matter of mass possession, but there's a frightening thing here, and this is somewhat of a controversial observation. In some ways, this uncertainty, this sheer physical terror and panic are similar to what people have reported experiencing during one of the all-too-common mass shooting incidents at schools in the United States. And this is not, you know, this is not to say they are in any way apples to apples, as the corporate world would put it, but we can understand emotionally the uncertainty and the horror that the teachers especially are confronted with when they're trying to protect these students, and realizing, you know, very quickly how many more students there are than teachers.
And that they can't, that they're powerless to either comfort them. It's not that kind of thing. It's like so aggressively taken hold of these children that there's not, they're literally thrashing as though they're having fits or seizures or something. And that therein lies the whole impulse of like, okay, I think I better just extricate myself for the time being, you know?
Yeah. And I would just add, when you're talking about that uncertainty, to be there in the room to experience this is something that, you know, the three of us can't fathom. Maybe you can't right now in this moment, you get a sense of it, but not knowing whether there is something real affecting these children, not knowing whether, you know, a single child had something happen and then the rest are reacting to that. You literally have no idea what's going on, and you've got in the back of your mind perhaps the belief that there is something supernatural or otherworldly or beyond the earth, essentially, mm-hmm. beyond mm-hmm. things that can occur here physically to a child. You believe that perhaps something like that could be happening, and if that's happening, then you could also be affected, right, as a teacher, yeah. as a guardian.
That's key. I would say it's exacerbated in this situation because this area of Malaysia, this town specifically, it's small. The people are close-knit. You probably know everyone, or you know of them if you're here. And again, this area has a deep, fertile history of folklore. You know what I mean? The cultural ecology is very strong. So I would say it would be in the front of mind for many people for reasons we're going to find out very soon. By the time just a few hours have passed, by the time the day is done, 39 people, including a couple of adults, a couple of teachers, have clearly been affected by something. And again, because this is a small town, news travels quickly. Is this a case of magic? Is this a case of mass possession? What could cause, with no clear physical explanation, what could cause almost 40 people to suddenly, without warning and without explanation, appear to lose their minds? What exactly was happening here, and why did it seem contagious?
We'll find out after a quick word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. To fully answer this question, we have to understand a little more about Malaysia in general and a little more about Kelantan itself. This is a region of the world that is probably unfamiliar to a lot of people in the US. And the big plot twist, the first thing you need to know, is this. While this incident in 2018 is very, very strange, it is by no means the first time something like this has happened in Kelantan, and it's not the first time something like this has happened in Malaysia. There may be, if you wanted to be sensationalistic about it, you could say there may be a mass possession crisis in Malaysia.
Mm. Oof. Yeah. We're only talking about one school out of 68 similar schools that are secondary schools that are there in Kelantan. And there have been events at other schools that were similar to this. Not exactly the same, but pretty similar. Just 2 years prior in 2016, there was another outbreak in multiple schools, not just one. It seems like stretches of the entire region were hit with very much the same thing. There's one case where 100 children were affected rather than 39 in this 2018 case. 100 children in a single school in Kota Baru. And also, get this, another school in Kelantan. A different one than the one we're discussing in this main case we're talking about from 2018.
Can we really quickly, there's actually an article that we found in researching this from the Kota Baru incident where there's a video of this behavior. And I think it's identical to what we're hearing from the case, you know, at the top of the show and a lot of these other cases in the article, which you can find on a site called Ancient Origins. There is discussion of seeing a figure clad in black, you know, which is probably to me the same type of figure that's this like face of evil. There's a quote from one of the girls from the school saying, "It was haunting me. I couldn't escape. I opened my mouth and tried to scream, but no sound came out. I passed out." And referring to this black figure. And there's even another video or a still where it kind of tries to highlight this figure, like circling it with a, you know, like a digital Sharpie in the background. But can we all listen to this together maybe real quick, and then we can kind of react? Yeah, it's chilling stuff. And you see the camera, whoever's holding the camera, just kind of walking around, and you're just in the midst of this. And then there's this one young woman at the end, or it's actually the video goes on for about 5 minutes, but the part that we watched up to just now, where she's literally kind of almost in a prayer position, but repeatedly going from up to down with her, like, you know, it almost, it's a very twisted, almost worshipful position. It's, oh my God, it's just really pretty shocking.
And I believe this may be a different video, but I believe this is the one where we see spiritual healers coming in and attempting to restrain people, reciting yes. prayer.
That's right. Yeah. In the article, they refer to them as exorcists. But I believe the more accurate description would be what you're saying, Ben, just spiritual healers from the Muslim faith. Particular prayers from the Quran were recited.
Yeah. And this will be familiar to people who've listened to our episode on exorcism or possession in the non-Western world. Because we spend as a culture in the West way too much time thinking of Catholicism automatically when we think of exorcism. It exists in so many other cultures. And to the point about what to call these individuals, whether you want to call them spiritual healers or the BBC, British Broadcasting, took a weird stance and called them witch doctors.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a quote from someone there on the scene, mm-hmm. Apparently.
Yeah.
I think it was scholars, Islamic experts, and witch doctors.
Right, which would be, you know, people who are practicing the traditional values, spiritual beliefs, rather, of the area, many of which predate Islam, probably, but are now seen through the lens of it due to religious syncretism. The point is, you can hear in that clip that you just played, Noel, how I like the way you use the word cacophony, like how cacophonous, how terrifying and discordant this is. This looks kind of like a riot, you know what I mean? Or a mass poisoning. Something has happened to these people. And there were interviews about this case in Kota Baru. One of the senior teachers or administrators blamed supernatural entities. They're considered largely a factual thing in this state in Malaysia by many people. And this staff member says, "Our students were possessed and disturbed by the spirits. We are not sure why it happened. We don't know what it is that affected us." And she pointed out some stuff about the school itself. She said, "This place is a bit old, and these children can be disobedient and sometimes throw their rubbish around the school grounds. Perhaps they hit some jinn and offended the spirits." Jinn would be kind of, I believe the Malaysian term is BOMO, B-O-M-O-H. We mentioned these practitioners in an earlier episode on the Orang Pandang, I believe.
The greasy ghost.
Yes, the grease ghost. Yes. Who gets greased up and runs around terrifying people.
Well, no, isn't there a sexual assault component to that ghost as well?
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah.
But in this case, we're talking about the Islamic faith and jinn, like actual jinn, right? That's what we're referring to, which is interesting.
I love jinn. I'm excited for that new show that you're EPing as well. I write about jinn pretty often in my personal life, but man, their intro story is amazing too.
Oh man, have you seen the Wishmaster? It's sort of a lesser Wes Craven movie from, I guess, the late 90s. The Wishmaster is an evil djinn. And the first sequence in that movie, the rest of it, whatever, take it or leave it, the first sequence is bonkers fun.
I keep thinking about the Islamic origin story, the beings rot from smokeless flame. Mm-hmm. They think it's green fire. And they're considered, as we explored previously, they are considered a very real thing. They're an accepted reality of the world in many places, especially when there's a large, very traditional Muslim demographic in the population. So this person is an adult, right? They are in a position of authority and responsibility, and they also seem to sincerely believe something supernatural occurred. And whether or not you believe there was something supernatural at play, this was a disaster. Eventually, according to a local reporter at the time, this 2016 incident and several other related incidents at other schools that were happening, all clustered around this same year, caused the country of Malaysia to shut down all the schools in the area because these cases of collective screaming or possession or whatever you want to call it appeared to happen one after the other nonstop. They were spreading like psychic wildfire from one school to the next.
Yeah, and it's not just kids. There were a couple of bouts with factory workers where a similar thing appeared to occur, I believe it was in the 1960s. One can imagine that whatever is happening, whether it is spiritual, mental, psychological, psychic, whatever it is, it appears to be much bigger than this one isolated incident at this one school that, was this more newsworthy thing that we were looking at the top of this episode. That seems to be a certainty. The other thing is that experts on both sides of this, the more skeptical and the more believers that there is something spiritual happening here, they're still grappling with the root of it. What is truly happening? How do they now address it is the big question.
I think you made a really good point earlier, and we've been hinting around this a bit. We talked about the greasy ghost and just the history of Malaysian fascination with lore and with demons and with jinn and all that stuff. It's not just considered stories, especially in the more rural areas and maybe the less cosmopolitan parts of the country. I mean, it's like you see this and you believe it. That they really felt that they were seeing genuine spiritual phenomenon. And even me, being somewhat of a skeptic or any of the three of us, I think faced with what we just saw in that video clip, I would react the same way. I just would have been overwhelmed and not knowing what to make of it. Not to mention if I was tied to some kind of real deep religious belief in these phenomena. I can't even wrap my head around what that must have felt like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, we're being careful here, right? Because you can see already that there are competing explanations for this phenomenon, but there is something happening, and it has been happening. There were other cases from schools in 2012. The factory worker stuff you mentioned, Matt, I believe there were other incidents of that as well, dating to the 1970s and the 80s. Something is happening, and whatever is happening appears to be something bigger than an isolated incident at a single school. A second big point here is that secular and spiritual experts are grappling with the root of this phenomenon, as well as the best ways to address it. So we have two answers, or two, proposed frames of thought through which we can view this profoundly disturbing phenomenon. We could categorize them as the secular answer and the religious or spiritual answer. And they both have a lot to bring to bear here. What do they have to say? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. The secular answer concerns group psychology. It may sound mundane at first, but there's a fascinating and somewhat disturbing phenomenon at play here, depending on who you ask. If you ask someone like Robert Bartholomew, a medical sociologist based in the U.S. and a longtime scholar of this phenomenon, specifically in Malaysia, then he will tell you this is mass hysteria or mass psychogenic illness. It's the rapid spread of genuine physical symptoms among a large group of people with no plausible organic cause. Imagine a headache that is contagious, the way a cold is, but spreads much more quickly.
Yeah. Bartholomew refers to this pretty cleverly as a software problem, like a glitch, describing the condition as a collective stress response prompting an overstimulation of the nervous system. And he, I don't know, this is a little divisive, maybe oversimplification here, but he calls Malaysia the, quote, mass hysteria capital of the world. According to his research, Kelantan is the, quote, most religiously conservative of all Malaysian states, end quote, with a perfect storm of social factors that can lead to this kind of mass hysteria. And that's kind of what we were talking about a little while ago, just how you would react to this and how you would maybe allow yourself to be swept up in this kind of, you know, fervor. And he says this stuff doesn't happen overnight. Instead, the environment leads to a mass hysteria outbreak, kind of in the way a pressure cooker might, with building up of stress in a group until it just pops, you know, when it hits that breaking point and can't contain the pressure anymore.
We certainly appreciate the words of Mr. Bartholomew, but there is still a bit of controversy, I would say, about just this concept of mass hysteria, how it begins, what the causes actually are. There's not a ton of understanding about it. There's been quite a bit of observation of events that appear to be mass hysteria, certainly, so you can study it, right? But if you look at the manual that is used for psychology, both students, practitioners, everyone alike, the DSM, it is not listed. Mass hysteria is not a thing that is in there, which that doesn't mean it's wrong. That is a tome that is constantly being updated and it is always evolving. So who knows? Maybe in the future it will be listed in there as we learn more.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, because we have to remember the DSM is not somehow sacrosanct. It's definitely had some evolutions that I had to encounter. I believe for a time, someone checked me on this, wasn't homosexuality listed in the DSM? Just to give you a snapshot of how imperfect that is. And that's not a ding on science either. It's just saying we haven't figured everything out, right? And what I like about the point you're making here, Matt, is that we do not fully understand, right? You're absolutely right. There's a bit of a black box here with what we call mass hysteria. And even hysteria itself is a little bit of a loaded word if you know the etymology.
So it's a misogynist roots, right? Like the idea of a hysterical woman or like wandering womb syndrome and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, the wandering uterus. That's
the
right
one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the etymology of that is not perfect either. But to your point, Matt, whether or not we know the specifics, experts consider this a real phenomenon rather than a theoretical one. There's this book that when we were in the office, I used to take every opportunity to carry around with me or mention or reference. And it's this huge tome called Outbreak. It's an encyclopedia of, you remember this one, Matt, I think. It's an encyclopedia of mass hysteria outbreaks documented throughout the world in history and time. And I'm starting to realize that Malaysia is thoroughly underrepresented in that work. The people like Dr. Simon Wesley, who is a psychiatrist at King's College Hospital in London, describe mass hysteria as a collective behavior that has common physical symptoms. And again, we have to emphasize these are physical. It's, these people aren't, you know, like, oh, pretending I've got a headache or something. They are experiencing physiological problems.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like that nocebo effect. We talked about the placebo effect and the idea that you can feel better when you believe that the thing that you're taking is efficacious. The nocebo effect is the opposite of that. We talked about that again in a recent episode. It's the idea that you can actually have psychological or even psychosomatic, meaning physiological effects brought on by the mind because of the expectation of an effect, something like a treatment or perhaps interaction with something more spiritual might have on you. Maybe that's not a perfect one-to-one comparison, but it sure feels similar. Like you could really actually manifest sickness or seizures or some kind of real visceral body reactions to something that is an unseen thing that may or may not be quote unquote real.
And those physical reactions that Noel's talking about there and what we talked about earlier in the episode with what these children were experiencing are things like fainting, palpitations of the heart, headaches, nausea, shaking, and what we would call fits, which would just, you know, I mean, just being uncontrollable in some way, which would, again, kind of look as though it might be a seizure. And Dr. Wesley, this person from King's College we're talking about, he notes that mass hysteria is, quote, often attributed to a medical condition, but for which no conventional biomedical explanation can be found. And one of the biggest things about this whole thing is that, you know, let's say this is occurring to one person because they are thinking about something, they just experienced something, and they're going through whatever this is and how it's manifesting. The weirdest thing is the transmission of the identical thing or the mirroring. If you want to be extremely skeptical about it, like why does this transmit to other people or why do other people mirror these actions? That's one of the biggest questions.
Mm-hmm. And why are, yeah, like, okay, for instance, another physiological symptom of mass hysteria would be something like vomiting. Without being too crass, vomiting can be contagious because it's gross to watch someone throw up. And that makes other people throw up sometimes. So we can explain some of these, but how could a headache be contagious? How could involuntary body-wide fits, shaking, seizing, how could that be contagious? We don't understand. We do understand that there's a commonality. There's a demographic that seems particularly prone to mass possession or mass hysteria, whatever you want to call it, in Malaysia. The victims are overwhelmingly young women, usually, but not always, of the Muslim faith. And this, I think, leads us to the second lens through which we can view this epidemic of mass hysteria, or again, mass possession, and that's the religious answer. Like you said earlier, spirits, jinn.
One thing I would just like to add here while we're still in the more skeptical science realm is because we're talking about the demographics of people who are affected by this commonly, right? We're talking about younger women. Something we looked at, we were making unobscured the first season, was the feelings of powerlessness and inability to affect change when you are a younger woman in a largely patriarchal society. I'm not the right person to be talking about this, but it's just something that we, I think, need to note here. And it's something that could be occurring in Malaysia as well, and especially within, as we're transferring now into the more religious factors, how much of what occurs in your life as a young woman living in a society that is patriarchal and possibly religious with almost all male heads, is that you feel powerless, you feel unable to speak, much like what these young women were saying they experienced, especially Sita, where she wants to scream, but she cannot scream. She's unable to, right? And I know that's thinking about it on a symbolic way or in a symbolic way, and I don't know if there's any merit to that, but there are some scholars, at least when they're looking at the Salem witch trials, who seem to find a connection there.
And that's an excellent point. It's one that we have to address. We'll explore a little deeper when we're talking about the religious aspects here.
And I think it's a really smart observation, and it also reminds me of the episode we just did on poltergeists and the idea of children feeling out of control and not being able to speak and perhaps using that as an opportunity to do some of the stuff. It's different, you know, some of the poltergeist type mischief, definitely different, but related to this whole feeling of powerlessness. I think it's an interesting observation, Matt.
With that, let's dive into the religious lens, which should not be dismissed and perhaps is dismissed too readily by some experts. Spirits, jinn, the smokeless fire, right? Malaysia is a deeply religious, deeply spiritual country, and belief in what we in the West would call the supernatural is widespread, particularly, as we've established, in more rural areas. So there are spiritual experts as well as secular experts who bring their experience to bear on this phenomenon. Consider the spiritual healers like Zaki Ya. Zaki Ya has been an Islamic spiritual healer for more than two decades, and he is one of the people who helped Siti, the 17-year-old girl from the 2019 case, recover from this incident in the months after whatever happened. He claims we share our world with these unseen beings, meaning jinn, and he notes that, like humans, they can be good or bad. I believe that Western fiction has sold us a bill of goods on jinn. The real folklore about them is much more interesting. But Robin Williams did, for the record, do a great job in Aladdin. I will die on that hill.
Wait, is there any debate around that concept? I thought that was considered a classic role. Classic.
I mean, he wasn't portraying a jinn, guys. The jinn that he's supposed to be portraying is like the most evil kind.
Right, right.
Come on.
Well, explain really quick. Isn't so genie is just like a romanticized kind of Americanized pronunciation of jinn. They're not two different things, right? I mean, I'm sure there's different categories, but they are. It is just a byproduct of sort of Americanizing that word jinn, correct?
I would say anglicizing.
That's the word. You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So jinn come in a couple of different genres and varieties, and like Matt said, there are some that are just purely known to be evil, and then there's some that are. Like human beings, they can have different religions as well. They're much more in personality like people, honestly, which I think is fascinating. So Zaki Ya is considered a spiritual authority, but Zaki Ya does not believe that science somehow has no place in this conversation. We have to realize that, you know, a great deal of scientific progress historically came from the Muslim world. You know what I mean? Like a lot of the things that we do today are only possible because people of this faith figured these scientific principles out. He says that mental health can play a role in many of the cases that he has experienced over his past few decades. And he is still adamant, mental health aside, that jinn are the ultimate cause of these outbreaks. He says science is important, but it cannot fully explain the supernatural. Non-believers, he says, to our earlier point in the show, won't understand these attacks unless it happens to them.
Mm. That's a really good point. And he's not the only healer or specialist in the Muslim faith that has this position. Dr. Mayuddin Ismail, he's a healer in a nearby state, Pahang, or P-A-H-A-N-G. He was seeking to combine spirituality and science, right, as a way to explain this thing and then create an anti-hysteria kit. How cool is that? It sounds like a great idea. It sounds innovative. It also maybe doesn't sound this way, but is expensive.
Yeah, that's the most controversial aspect of the kit. It's about the size of a small suitcase. It'll run you around the equivalent of 2,100 US dollars.
Wait, what's in it? Do we know?
Ammonia, there's some bamboo penchers, there are a couple of gloves, there are a couple of inhalants,
some CBD gummies or something. Like,
I don't know about the CBD,
but it's literally just like things you could get anywhere, right? Like, what's so special about the kit? Seems a little opportunistic to me.
I think our perception of that kit would be would rely very much upon our default levels of skepticism or belief. You know, it's interesting though, because we always see these things in conflict, right? They're portrayed, spirituality and science, as though they are somehow mutually exclusive, but more secular academics feel that it's crucial that we acknowledge the role of spirituality in these investigations. I especially enjoyed Irma Ismail's take on this. She's a clinical psychologist at University Putra, Malaysia, and she says Malaysian culture has its own take on this phenomenon of mass hysteria or mass possession outbreaks, and that integrating spiritual beliefs with mental health treatment is a more realistic approach to the problem. You won't make progress with people if you go in, especially as an outsider, tell them everything they're doing is wrong, dismiss what they believe and talk down to them. You know what I mean? That's when people do that, they don't really want a solution. Anytime you see those kind of condescending bully tactics, people are doing it in bad faith, in my opinion. And we have to be careful to avoid the stereotypes of misrepresentations about the role of religion here. We have in the past on this show, we've been dinged at times for seeming too skeptical in one particular aspect of spirituality or another. But deep spiritual faith is common in so many parts of the world. And it's common for a reason. It works for people. It's like science. It has profound effects on people's lives. Whether or not you personally believe in the specific aspects of a given belief system, there's no denying that spiritual beliefs can and do exert real effects on the physical world.
Yeah, and some folks believe that the cultural impact of religious practices like these could play a role in the case of these mass hysteria outbreaks. A psychologist by the name of Afiq Noor argues that the stricter implementation of Islamic law in schools around this part of the country, it's absolutely linked to the surge in these kinds of outbreaks. He says this, quote, "Malay Muslim girls attend school under rigid religious discipline. They observe stricter dress codes and can't listen to music which isn't Islamic." And then we have a clinical psychologist named Stephen Diamond, who seems to agree with Noor, saying that he believes the, quote, "painful, frightening, and embarrassing symptoms that we've seen associated with mass hysteria could actually be, to your point, Matt, quote, indicative of a frustrated need for attention. And in an article that he wrote for Psychology Today, Diamond asks this question: might their remarkable symptoms be saying something about how they are really feeling inside, but are unable or unwilling to allow themselves to consciously acknowledge, feel, or verbalize?
And this is exactly the point made in a previous episode of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know about possession or exorcism. People are intelligent, right? And we talked about this in Poltergeist as well, so I don't want to be redundant here. But if you are in a society that does not allow you a voice, you will naturally seek some way to be heard. And that way, you know, the same way that sometimes kids were saying, oh, it's not me, it's the poltergeist. And my parents won't listen to me, but they'll listen to the poltergeist. It is possible that there are people in these patriarchal societies who are saying, well, people in power won't listen to me because they think I'm somehow less than, but maybe they'll listen if they think it's something else, like a jinn. And we're not accusing these people. I want to emphasize, at least for me, I'm not accusing anybody involved in this of purposefully doing something. I think there's a deeper psychological aspect at play, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think we all aren't accusing anyone of doing something false, right? I mean, it must feel real or must be real. Or there is a real thing that actually occurred. This isn't some kind of smokescreen. And I think it would be the same for any instance of mass hysteria like this. The big question is it some kind of internal stress due to societal issues, due to religious issues, due to, the age and the stresses of that? Or is it something bigger? And that's, what we're really left with today is trying to figure out which parts of this are true. And, I don't know if we're going to, be able to give you that final answer that maybe you'd hope for, something that we would hope for, but we can at least walk away with this knowing all of the possibilities of what this could be.
Well said. I think one of the biggest questions here, regardless of your personal beliefs, hinges on the contagious aspect of contagion, right? So an outbreak of mass hysteria begins with what experts call an index case. That's your canary in the coal mine, figuratively. All it takes is a major spike of anxiety in a group situation. Again, typically a close-knit group of people, right? Sometimes people that society does not treat as equals. And when this one person breaks, right, when a Sita has this event, this experience, then the people around this person, if they see their classmate faint or have a fit or scream, this can trigger a reaction in them, an involuntary reaction, right? Just like an illness might spread. No one decides, hey, I'm going to get the flu. It just happens, right? And you don't have control over it. So there is an interesting thing, though, about Sita. It's a question I had for you all, because I was reading into her day-to-day life before this event occurred. And one thing that she was doing in between these marathon studying bouts was allegedly playing a Mortal Kombat, a mobile version, on her phone. And if you read her firsthand descriptions of the visions she experienced, I don't know, this is my cultural lens, because I know what Mortal Kombat looks like. And I was thinking, some of these violent scenes, as you describe them, remind me of Mortal Kombat.
Shang Tsung?
Which is like a pretty cool game, but very violent. Yeah. So it's possible, right, that these outbreaks may be a kind of sociological venting mechanism for enormous stress, perceived powerlessness, and they're framed through this cultural lens of rich folklore, this ecosystem of deeply rooted religious beliefs. And you're right, Matt, we don't have maybe the 100% solid answer on this, but this episode is a little optimistic for us, because there's good news. We know what happened after this.
Yeah, that's right. After July 2018, these events took place, authorities upped security at the school. They restructured their safety programs, and they began to oversee a change in staff. Guess it wasn't a good look that those folks bolted and locked themselves in the classrooms instead of taking care of these kids that were clearly experiencing trauma. Additionally, the school introduced daily prayer and psychology sessions to hopefully help alleviate some of these stresses. But I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
I see an issue with, hey, there's either Jin possessing children at our school, or our children are going through an intense psychological set of issues.
That's right.
Let's increase security.
Yeah.
Right. Which, again, has commonalities, but security,
but it would have psychological effects on the kids,
right? But security could be, and here in the West, because things are so militarized now, we think of security as somebody strapped with a vest and firearms, right?
Or metal detectors, or like machine gun turrets or something,
turning schools into training prisons, right?
So maybe it's more like blessing the building in some way, right? Or rituals for that, or
more attention per child, so also I do have to point out, from everything I found, I don't know whether those psychology lessons are being led by licensed professionals. So, but any kind of counseling can help people at such a difficult time in their life. So how about Sita Nuranisa? We met her at the beginning of the story. She had a terrible day in July of 2018. You will be happy to know that whether this is a case of spiritual interference or psychological panic, neither Sita nor any of her classmates were permanently injured in the outbreak. And as of 2019, I believe, Sita finds solace in karaoke. She plans to pursue a career as a policewoman. And she has not been plagued by possession or hysteria since. So we have there you have it, folks. One of the rare happy endings to a story on stuff they don't want you to know.
Yes. Happy, except for the fact that this is going to happen again somewhere with other groups of probably young people. And it's not going to be fun, and it'll be controversial.
Have we considered, I know this is all wrapped up in a lot of these interpretations of this, but the idea that when you're faced with one child behaving this way and exhibiting this type of very intense, physiological kind of responses or whatever, and you are also exposed to this heightened level of belief and perhaps fear and some of this, you know, demonology and this djinn and all that stuff that's very much in, wrapped up in the culture. And then, as we know, this more rural parts of the country, much more so. Do you think that's where the power of belief comes in and almost like kicks into high gear and is like, oh, well, if I'm seeing someone, you know, going through this, then I should too. I don't know. It's almost subconscious.
Peer pressure?
Kind of. But yeah. A weird kind of psychological, spiritual peer pressure. I just, the whole contagious part of it is what really is tough for me. It's fascinating.
If you'd like to read more about this phenomenon, I would recommend reading Epidemic Hysteria and Social Change, an Outbreak in a Lower Secondary School in Malaysia. That's in the Singapore Medical Journal by Jin In To. And this is weird because, to be completely clear, this was published in 1975, but a lot of the things it's saying are still spot on. That just gives you a sense of how long this has been going. And to your point, Matt, how likely it is that there will be similar incidents in the future.
This has been really interesting, and we really want to know what you think specifically about this. But before we tell you how to get in contact with us, I do want to do a quick plug, if that's okay, guys. I hate to do this, but I just want to plug the brand new show, The Hidden Djinn. It is available now. It is spelled D-J-I-N-N. It's a show we're making with Aaron Mankey and Rabia Chowdhury, and it is a short series, but it's all about djinn. The different kinds of djinn, stories from people who have experienced claim to have experienced interaction with djinn, about the background of like the religious background and aspects of that, as well as just really anything you could ever want to learn about it. It's going to be in this show, and it's fascinating, utterly fascinating. I recommend checking it out. If you don't want to do that, you can check us out, and we are all over the place on social media, Twitter, on Facebook. Most of them were conspiracy stuff. On Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show.
That's right. You can also find us on our preferred spot to interact with listeners and for listeners to interact with one another, called Here's Where It Gets Crazy on Facebook. All you got to do is drop a name, one name, two names, three names, all the names, any name associated with the show will do, or just something to let us know that you're a human person that is aware that this is a podcast and a group associated with said podcast. And then you're in. Lots of fun stuff there. And hey, while you're on the internet, how about going over to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a nice review? Want to know what you think of the strange news episodes and the listener mail, hearing back from you. We've been really enjoying it. How do you feel about it? Let the internet know so others can follow suit and discover the show. We'd very much appreciate it.
Give us a random strange call, 1-833-STDWYTK. Take 3 minutes and, get weird with it. We'd love to hear from you, and you may end up on the listener mail segment in the future. So please let us know whether you are comfortable with your story being shared or your name. if that isn't enough, if this whole, like, Sunday of communication roots still needs a cherry on top for you, then boy, do we have good news. You can reach us regardless of the day, the time, the hour, the season, at our old-fashioned email address where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.